Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, James Ronson. So, James, you decided to self-publish your latest book. Why did you decide this was the way to go?
Well, I wasn't having very much luck with publishing through the major publishers because I did get a hold of an agent, but in fact, the agent was unable to find me a publisher among the three large Canadian publishers. Mm. I also applied to a number of smaller publishers all across the land, essentially, and had no luck with them. So that's when I decided I would try to do it alone and to publish it myself. And what I discovered was that it was quite a very simple process, and I was able to control the means of production, the cover production, as well as the everything that a smaller publisher would have provided. So mm-hmm. It gave me a great deal of independence because I could organize my own book launch, I could find my own editor, etc.
So you found an editor?
I did find an editor. Marie-Lynn Hammond acted as the editor. She is part of our writing group, and she has great experience in the business. She gave me a lot of hints as to how I might create more conflict in the novel and expand the fictionalized character, Alex Gould, that I spoke about earlier.
What about the challenges, though? Did you have any? I mean, there must have been some in setting this up. How did you publish it? Through Kindle, for instance?
Yes,
or what?
I publish it through Kindle Direct Publishing, which asks you to produce it in two different forms. As a Kindle book, so it took on the format for a Kindle, yeah. And I had to set my own price for that, which it's $2.99, available through Kindle Direct, through Amazon. You can order it that way, and it'll electronically transfer the book immediately to somebody's Kindle device.
You're right.
I also prepared a print book, and so initially I wasn't very satisfied with the way that it was formatted, the way that it came out. And so I decided to upload it again and print it a second time. And that seemed to work. That seemed to work better. So I was happy with creating the file. You essentially need three items to publish with Kindle Direct Publishing. You need to be able to come up with a file which you can convert to PDF file. And that in turn becomes the basis by which Amazon prints your book. You also need a picture of yourself for the back cover. And then, of course, you need to have a picture for the front cover, which I was able to upload. Again, when you're self-publishing, you have to be very careful about which pictures you choose. They must be in the public domain to avoid issues with copyright. Fortunately, I happened upon a picture of J.D.A. Crichton, which was taken in the early part of the 20th century, and that picture, rather, was in the public domain, and it depicts the Rideau Rebels. J.D.A. Crichton was the captain of the honorary captain, essentially, of the Rideau Rebels, which was organized by the Stanley brothers, sons to Lord Stanley of Stanley Cup fame. And essentially, they were a team that barnstormed around southern Ontario. They actually used the coach that belonged to Lord Stanley, called the Victoria Coach, and they would use his private rail car to take them to the various venues in order to play different hockey teams around the province. J.J. Crichton chose not to join them on this particular trip. He played some games with them in Ottawa, and he chose that because he was very involved with the Senate, as Speaker of the Senate. In fact, he did that job for nearly 40 years.
So tell us a little about, now, you obviously there must be a market, in your opinion, for hockey fiction, and you're even writing another one. Is there a good market for hockey fiction?
I think there is a good market. I think that it's under-recognized in terms of a market. I mean, essentially, I think there are only two really good literary fiction novels that have been written, one being King Leary by Paul Quarrington, and a second one being Indian Horse, of course, is an important hockey novel as well,
right,
that explores the indigenous character and the abuse that he suffers. So again, and it was made into a movie recently.
Wagamese.
Yes, Richard Wagamese.
What about the new novel? What's it going to deal with then? Later or?
It will take place later on, that's right. It centers around four real-life people. It includes Conn Smythe, who is the former general manager and owner of the Toronto Maple Leafs. It includes Frederick McLaughlin, who was the first owner of the Chicago Blackhawks. And the novel centers around Max Bentley, who was a star hockey player, who was the subject of a very important trade. In fact, it was the trade almost similar to the Gretzky trade of the modern era, the biggest trade in NHL history up until that time. And Max Bentley was traded from the Hawks to the Leafs to Conn Smythe. And it involves six other players going the other way. So it was a trade of some magnitude. The fourth person in the book, and it brings a female element to it, is Irene Castles, who was a very, very famous dancer in the 1920s and the 1930s. And she eventually married Frederick McLaughlin, the owner of the Chicago Blackhawks. So I weave those four stories into the novel.
You published a nonfiction piece about scuba diving in Hill Spirits 4. Do you do a lot of diving?
Well, a lot of diving at the time in Mexico, because the story takes place in Mexico, in Cozumel. So I did learn how to dive, did a lot of diving for a three-week period, and I haven't done any diving since.
Oh.
The reason being that I developed a bad case of tinnitus while I was diving. So while I really enjoyed diving, it's no longer really medically possible for me.
Actually, the piece you wrote was exciting, so I suppose that's why you decided to make it the basis of your submission to Hill Spirits 4.
That's right.
How about reading to us from Deep Dive?
Deep Dive. The needle on the regulator hovered in the red zone. Almost out of air, 60 feet below the surface of the ocean, meant trouble, big trouble. A moment of panic seized me. I struggled to calm my nerves, as well as my breathing, to avoid draining my tank even faster. We first came to Cozumel in the early 80s, soon after my wife and I were married. Then it was a tropical paradise, Edenic, a rare gem. White sand beaches glistening in the sunlight, quaint restaurants, a small downtown, a haven for snorkelers and sun worshippers. By our second trip to the island in 2012, everything had changed. When we ventured out in daytime, we were hassled on a minute-by-minute basis with shouts of, hey lady, come and look at this. The entire island was on the hustle, for the era of the cruise boat had arrived, bringing hundreds of tourists. You could sense a predatory presence among the hawkers and sellers of cheap goods as they scanned the crowd. Even at night, there was no respite. Incessant cries of taxi, taxi, taxi reverberated in our ears. There appeared to be no escape, and we were committed to stay an entire month. What to do? Instead of heading south into the dreaded town, we chose to head north. It was there that we happened upon the Blue Angel Dive and Scuba Shop. The shop was well named. It was to be our saving grace, though it would lead me to a near-death experience. Off the northeast coast of Cozumel lies the second largest coral reef in the world. Below the surface of the crashing waves, an entire world exists, unknown to most surface dwellers. Schools of fish in a rainbow of colors flash in all directions, like a kaleidoscope. The pergula clownfish rippling in orange and white, darting tangs in neon blue, the queen angel with its brilliant blotches of yellow speckled in black and white. Below lie the waving corals in whites, charcoals, and lavenders, tentacular and spectacular. Learning how to dive is a fierce endeavor. It takes many dives to unravel the dynamics of hovering, learning how to breathe, and understanding how to be vigilant about the capacity of your tank. Our black wetsuits became a second skin. Our masks became our cameras, and our fins, motors of jet propulsion on our feet. Matt, our expat Canadian instructor, patiently led us both through the various stage of the certification course. Having gained our licenses, we were primed for further adventure. We had witnessed many wonders in the sunlight filtering down from the surface of the ocean during daytime. Now we were ready for something truly unique, our first night dive. And that dive precedes the deep dive that happened to bring a near-death experience to me.
Well, now you've left us out on a limb. We're going to have to read your piece.
Yes, you will.
And the book. Okay, thanks so much, Jim, for coming in to tell us about your new book and reading to us from it and from Hill Spirits 4. So to connect with us, listeners, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to us at our website, wordonthehills.com, where all these programs are archived and available to listeners at any time. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.